This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, happy Tuesday, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Stacy Westfall in Loudonville, Ohio.
And you're listening to the monthly Stacy Westfall episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November the 5th. This episode is brought to you by Equithrive. Good morning, horse world. Well, good morning this Tuesday. It is so good to have Stacy back for her second monthly episode, but her first attempt at live. Hi, Stacy.
My first attempt at live. Hi, how are you?
Now, you've done live many times, but it's usually riding a horse in front of thousands of people.
Right.
So this will be
instead
easy.
Instead, it's like talking into a microphone with a cold with thousands of people.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. You're an old pro at this. So in case you didn't hear, last month, Stacy Westfall is joining us once a month. She is here the, what day is this? This is the last, or the first Tuesday of the month. So Stacy
is starting with the hard question.
Yeah, I know. Stacy's joining us the first Tuesday. I couldn't even remember what month it was. Joining us the first Tuesday of every month. And we do a fun show, and you have some guests lined up. Who do you have lined up for today?
I do. I have Ginny Talego, who joined me briefly last time. And today we're going to be talking about being congruent or incongruent. And the idea of cognitive dissonance with goals.
All right,
you're
going
to want to drink your coffee.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, yeah, have your coffee before that conversation.
That's going to be a coffee. We'd be wide awake. And then Molly Wagner is going to join me and talk about uveitis, otherwise known as moon blindness.
Very good. And of course, listeners can call in and ask you questions directly about their horses, whatever they want to ask. And we have a bunch that people have submitted to us already that we're going to try and tackle today. So hopefully you're going to learn a bit as we go along. The phone number to call in, if you want to, is 435-272-1997. That's 435-272-1997. You can also find that at horsesinthemorning.com. So, and we'll take callers as they come in. But in the meantime, you, since we talked last, went to a world show. What did you do?
I showed my horse.
What kind of world show was it?
Okay. I went to the Western Dressage World Show, and it was in Oklahoma. And I showed in a lot of Western dressage. So it was a 5-day show. I showed 4 of the 5 days. And I thought this was a good idea, Glenn, going into this. Let me know what you think. This is the way my brain was on the way in. I was like, well, I want to make sure that I treat the horses fairly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to sign them up like horse number one. So Willow's going to show 2 times the first day and Gabby will show...
Up.
Don't mind me. I'm
Did
just
Willow
dropping
knock
the mic.
Your mic over.
So I'm going to show Willow twice and Gabby once. And then the next day I'll show Gabby twice and Willow once. And we'll alternate all 4 days like that. And so
that's a lot
I signed
of showing.
Up. Yeah. So that sentence didn't go through my mind until I hit class number 3 and was like, oh my gosh, I can't follow directions anymore. So in Western dressage, you can actually have somebody read for you and they can say like A, enter, working jog, C, track, right. And I was thinking, I can't follow directions anymore.
So the horses were fine. You were the one that was whacked out.
I did a great job of balancing out what my horses needed. Me, however, I was like, oh, I can't even listen. I can't follow simple instructions.
This was what, day one?
That was day one.
Yeah.
That was day one. That was the 3rd class, day one. And I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be a long show.
So why so many classes aren't... Now, I'm thinking dressage. I'm thinking, well, you're in one particular class and you're in the same one. But do they do it like English dressage competitions where you have different types of classes that you compete in over the days? Or how's it work?
Yeah, so get this, out of all the 12, I never showed the same I'm going to call it a pattern, but it's really, it's a test.
A test.
It, the same, I never showed the same test twice, even though I showed that many times. So the way it worked, if I can say this without getting it, I've got to try to get it clear in my own head. So basically, you know, in dressage, how there's, there'll be like, there's level one and level two and level three and level four. There are more than that. We'll just use those for examples. And then each of those four tests, each of those four levels has four tests inside of it.
Right.
So I wanted to show all of level one with Gabby, which meant that on the first day I showed level one, test one. On the second day I showed level one, test two. And on the third day I showed level one, test three.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it went like that. But all of the levels were like that. But I wanted to show Gabby in, when I went to ride with my riding instructor before I went to the show, she said, you're kind of, with your horses, you're kind of in between levels. Like that, like, if I was going to tell you, like, you're almost ready to move up to the next level, but you're really kind of in this level. Mm. And so I was kind of in between levels. So I was basically, long story short, I was trying to mix my experience of the show. And again, I was doing a great job of like distributing the horse's amount of output, totally not considering my own output of like brain power that it takes to ride 12 different tests. Yeah, it was
hard
an experience.
To ride one test, 12 tests.
Right. 12 on two different horses over 4 days. I was like, oh, but yeah.
How'd the horses do?
You know, the horses did great. Everything that I did getting them ready really, it paid off. And what I mean by that is that hauling them from Ohio all the way down to Oklahoma, you worry that they're going to get tired on the trip. And then you wonder if you've prepared them enough, like emotionally, so that they're not just so drained by the whole, like, you don't want them having anxiety, basically. You don't want them having an experience that is taking away their energy because they're anxious. You already know you need to conserve them physically. And so it was really great because I got down there. They were surprisingly fresh. They felt a little bit like when my kids were little and the toddlers would get tired, but instead of getting tired, they would get like a wired tired. Mm-hmm.
You'd put them on speed.
This was how my horses were the first day. I was like, wow, this was not expected. Like, I was worried you guys would be tired, but they were very physically fresh. And so they settled in nicely. I got down there on Monday, which gave us Tuesday and Wednesday to really just, you know, settle in and get ready. And then we showed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And my favorite moment with both horses was the weather really changed while we were down there. So it went from being like 80 pushing 90 on the first 2 days, and then the weather really dropped and it became very, very chilly. And so it was like in the 50s. And so when I came out of showing the horses on the last day and I was leading them from the big indoor, which was all closed up, so it was kind of warm in the indoor, and you would come out, they were both almost still fresh enough to be like swirling their heads and stuff on the way back to the barn at the end of 4 days of showing. So I thought, this is good. They are very happy and fresh and good for the ride home. They've shown really well, but I know I didn't leave with this feeling that they were, you know, exhausted at the end of it. I was exhausted.
And then, you're exhausted and have to drive home 18 hours. <It's> like, you know,
on top of it all, my truck broke down during it. So yeah, you can add that in there. So
I don't care what kind of truck you have, how new it is, how old it is. It doesn't matter. Your truck breaks down on long trips.
Exactly.
You're going to get a flat or it's going to break down. Something's going to happen to the truck.
Yeah,
it happens every time. You know, these two were nothing. We had a lady on last month who went to the Haflinger breed show from like California to Lexington, and with one horse, seven riders, and they did 40 classes with that horse.
You know what? She's a good friend of mine.
Oh, really?
Susie. Yep.
Yeah, we had her on the show. It was like, are you kidding me? One horse?
That would be Leah. That would be
that's
Team
right.
Leah, and that is like little Leah Energizer Bunny.
That was her name, Leah. That's exactly right. And you know, there's the horse, and she said the horse was fresh the whole time. So
yeah,
I'm and pretty sure you're are big boned
rider. Yeah, that's you're only going to find one person who showed the horse that many times at the Halflinger show. So
how'd you end up? How did the did you take home a ribbon of some kind?
I took home a bunch of ribbons, and I took home 2 world championship titles.
Wow.
So, yeah. We'll call that a good day.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, was it 2 world championships, one for each horse, or did one horse like make fun of the other the whole way home?
One horse made fun of the other the whole way home. And my good friend Susie, who we were just discussing, she, when I started showing the horses and documenting it on YouTube and showing the whole progress, so I have Willow, and she's this cute little 14-hand dun mare. And she's just a cute little thing. And even on my dressage tests, traditional dressage tests and Western dressage tests, the judges often will draw a little heart and write cute pony. She's just cute. Like, that is the word that comes up with her. And then Gabby is my bigger mare. She's only like 15 hands, but in my barn, she's huge. And she's bigger. And when I finally started making videos with her, because she had actually been injured at the beginning of the YouTube series, so she didn't show up much at the beginning. And Susie said, I'm glad you're doing all of this with Willow, who's very cute and nice, but Gabby is gorgeous. And Willow is like the little sister who has the big sister who's gorgeous. And so, of course, on the way home, Gabby is gorgeous, and Gabby is the one that won both the world titles. So I'm quite sure that in the ride home, but Willow's the one that I earned my bronze medal with this spring in traditional dressage. So I really think they both have their own things to be bragging about to each other in the trailer.
Well, congratulations. So, you can add 2 more world championships to your shelf.
Well, thank you.
That's terrific. Well, let's do this. Let's hear from our sponsor, and then we'll get to our first question that was submitted by a listener. We'll be right back.
Choosing the right supplements for your horses can often feel like a chore, and you got enough of those. So think Equithrive when it comes to the health and performance of your equine athletes. From clinically proven joint support to essential performance nutrition, Equithrive products are developed with care, backed by science, and ready to go to work for you. So stop wasting your time and your money on unproven products. Equithrive has you covered. Visit Equithrive.com today.
First question. This was submitted by Suzette. I have a 3-year-old I have started. She is doing great with the Smart Start training book. My question is, she often picks up the wrong lead and then changes it or cross canters, then fixes it sometimes. Should I break her down? It sounds like Legos. Should I break her down? Just take the Legos apart, put them back together, and start over to get the correct lead, or just let her learn about balancing her body? What she does... When she does this, I am lunging her, I give her a chance to fix it, and then have her change directions to make her attention come back to me.
Aha. Okay. And what I want to say with this one is there's a few different ways to look at it. So I might dissect this just a little bit line by line. So first of all, you've got a 3-year-old who's basically, you know, cross-firing or picking up the wrong lead when you first start. When I've got a younger horse, or a greener horse, I should say, because if you've got an untrained horse that you start training at 8 years old, you can consider them untrained. So basically, if you've got this greener, untrained horse, I do want to let them figure out the balance with their body. I figure they're going to make these mistakes. But at the same time, I'm doing what you're doing, Suzette, which is I've got this little checklist in my mind, and I'm kind of watching, does this happen more when I'm going to the left, or does it happen pretty equally left to right? And is it happening? Are they picking up the correct lead, or are they in the correct lead and then they're popping out into the incorrect lead? So it does matter how it's happening, because you are basically collecting all this information so that as you are able to look back 30 days from now, 60 days from now, you're going to have a more clear view of the pattern that's happening. A really typical pattern would be that you start lunging them, they're pulling on you, so they're pulling towards the gate, so they pop out of the lead that direction. Then, you know, maybe they're picking up the correct lead, maybe they pick up the wrong lead, and then they fix it themselves. And it matters because if they're fixing it themselves and they're kind of coming back, that means they're getting more balanced. If they're in it, in the correct lead, and then they're popping out of it, but you know it's because they're pulling to the gate, then you can say, I can see how this is going to get better as the horse understands not pulling to the gate. If they, however, are loping along and they're just popping out in the hind end, a lot of times that'll be a strength issue. And I did an interview with a vet who said, do a lot of trotting. If you're having a lot of these cantering issues, do a lot of the physical buildup of your horse in, believe it or not, the walk, but the trot too, and do a lot of that. And then, you know, build your way up into it. And I thought that was great advice. And, but then let's answer this quickly two other ways. When you say that you say, I give her a chance to fix it, and then I have her change directions to make her attention come back to me. To me, that's a little bit of a red flag, because when you're asking her to change direction, that's actually going to be a pretty big move. So let's say she's going on her left lead, so she's going around you counterclockwise. If she's out of balance and you then have her switch back around and like do basically kind of a roll back to the inside and go to the right, you're looking at it like her attention is coming back to you, which could be the case mentally. But think about physically that you're actually asking her to make this huge move and switch directions and go into the opposite lead. So you could also have the side effect of having your horse go around and be like, I'm unbalanced. And now on top of it, I'm about to be asked to fling my body in another direction. And so that's going to actually potentially cause that horse to get a little more scrambly in their thinking, because they're not even getting the chance to figure out the balance. If I want mine to get more balanced, what I would rather do is I will pick a number, a fairly large number, like 15, 10, 15. So I'm going to say, I'm going to have you trot around here 15 times going the same direction. And maybe I'm going to have you lope around here 10 times the same direction. If I think she needs to have her balance corrected, maybe I'll put a log, like one single log ground pole out there that the horse could go over, because that will like auto correct their balance, because they'll see that. But just be careful you're not playing into this by switching the directions all the time. And my last tip is, should you break her down and start over to get the correct lead or not? It's very open in the beginning when they're young and you're training them. You can slow them down and help them find their balance, because if she's pulling on you and she's got all these other questions, then sure, break to another gate and help her rebalance that way. The only thing you want to watch for is if your horse falls into the, I kind of divide the horse world, like there's a bunch of horses that are on the plus side of life and a bunch of horses that are on the minus side. And basically the plus side is those hotter horses and the minus side is those colder horses. If it's a colder, lazier horse and 2 months from now, she's like really like picked up on the pattern that she pops out a lead and you break her down, that can become a thing. It can become a thing where she actually is like, oh, look, I can control the human. I pop out a lead and she lets me break down to a slower gait. So just watch that pattern isn't developing. If it does, what I actually do is when they, if I think that's the pattern that's happening, when they pop out a lead, I actually kick some dirt at them and kind of make them like squirt forward, jump forward a little bit faster. And they'll very often like self-correct in a flying lead change versus slowing down.
Very good. I got another one for you. Terry says, Buzz and I have made progress since we were at your clinic, but he seems to be pushing a bit against the snaffle. What bit do you suggest I try next? Assuming you remember who they are. I have a balding long pro roller. Let me see here. I have a balding long pro roller correction that seems to work well on my other two horses, and a Sweetwater loose jaw curb. The bit names are the most ridiculous things ever.
This is like ordering at Starbucks.
It is. They're like the most ridiculous names ever. We did that as a joke one time on the show. We just read bit names. Sweetwater loose jaw curb, like they were using on him when I bought him. I am thinking he does not like the tongue pressure. What bit do you usually go to from a snaffle? See, I should have just asked you, what bit do you usually go to from a snaffle? And we would have been better off.
This was way better, Glenn. This was way better. Like, I'm going to just get people to submit questions with the longest possible
bit names ever. Balding long pro roller correction.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And Western bit names are even worse. there were?
Well, I don't know, because I'm the one that's just moving into like the English bit names. And I'm like, what did you say that was? Can I take a picture of it? What's the item number? So I can ask about that without having to actually use a name. So, yeah, it might just be what we're used to, because, you know, I've mastered ordering at Starbucks and, you know, but nobody else can figure out what I just ordered. So it's all what you're into, I guess. But
so where do you go from a Snaffle?
We'll take the short one. Where do you go from a Snaffle? So what I actually do, where do I go from a Snaffle? Okay, it seems like a very easy to answer question on the surface, where it's like, oh, well, the order of bits that I use goes from bit number one to bit number two to bit number three to bit number four. But of course, it's never that simple. And I will answer it that simple way just for fun. I personally go from the Snaffle into like a little short shanked Snaffle that has a leather chin strap, and or a, and again, here's the worst part about all the bit names at the end of it, Glenn, is that they don't even all match. So like I'm holding my hand up here like that's going to help you know the shape of the port.
And also manufacturers use similar names for different things.
Yeah. And so basically I want to go into something kind of mild, and so I'll either use a short shank Snaffle because it's got a kind of a very similar feel. The shank is, as you might implied, is short, and I use a leather chin strap. The chin strap can actually make the bit feel much more mild when you use leather instead of the standard chain. And I don't take my horse out of a Snaffle until the horse can bend and counterbend and step around in some kind of a, think about a spin or at least a horsemanship turn of somewhere between 180 to 270. Like they've got to understand how to move around like that before I'll take them out of a Snaffle. But I think the question that when I read this question, it's like when the horse is pushing against the Snaffle, this can actually happen in any bit. Pushing against the Snaffle is not actually a bit problem. It is a balance between your hand and leg problem. And I think that's where people get a little bit confused, because the horse is pushing against the bit, but that could be a good amount of push, meaning like I want my horses to make contact with my hand. And so I want to be able to invite them into contact. So the horse pushing against the bit, but let's say that I want to have, just for a number, I want 6 ounces of pressure on the reins, and this horse is putting, let's just use pounds. Why did I go to ounces? It's probably because I'm drinking this drink that's ounces. Anyway, let's say that I want 1 pound of pressure against my hand, and the horse is pulling on me with 5 pounds. Well, I don't want 5 pounds, so the horse is pushing against the bit, and people tend to want to get a different bit. I would actually encourage you, this is going to sound crazy, to use your legs. So when the horse is pushing against the bit, so I want 1 pound, the horse is pushing with 5 pounds, I'm actually gonna use my legs, and I will bump, bump, bump kind of quickly like that. And it doesn't have to be spur. It just needs to be kind of a quick bump, 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 because what that'll do is when that horse is pushing into the bit, there's a pretty good chance he's also getting heavy on the forehand and getting like a downward feel. And I actually want to give him a little kick and have him, it'll wake them up and lighten them up on that bit contact, and it'll bring them back into balance, because the danger is I actually want this horse balanced between my bit and my leg. And what happens is sometimes people feel them get heavy in the bit, so they put a bigger bit on, and now they don't feel the heavy in the bit, but they also aren't doing anything. The rider's not doing anything with the rider's leg. So they're not putting this horse into collection. They're not putting that horse together. And so this is actually not as much of a bit problem as you would think.
You know, what we found over the years with everybody we've talked to, every trainer we've talked to has said almost almost every time that it's not a bit problem usually. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's something we hear commonly. It's not everything's going to be fixed with a different bit. Sometimes it's a training issue. And,
So let me throw in just a little bit of why. Like, so if I answer that way, then you could also argue, like, why would I ever switch bits?
Right.
So the reason I do switch bits is because there are subtle differences in the way that the bit communicates with the horse. So, for example, if I take a horse from a Snaffle to a shanked bit, what we automatically notice as soon as you put the shanks on is that the signal, so I videotaped it actually when I did the YouTube series with the horse named Jack. It was called Stacy's Video Diary Jack. And the first day that I ever put the shank bit on this horse, I could pick up with the two reins, and you could automatically see that the horse would give its face more vertically, like bringing that chin back was the signal that was automatically more implied by that bit. Just that is like literally what happens the first day. So you can't even blame it on like, oh, well, you're treating them different and you're training them different. The signal just feels different. The signal is a more clear signal for that, but a less clear signal for bending left and right, let's just say. So different bits have subtle signals, and that's why I do switch, but I don't switch so much because of like pushing against the bit, which is a much more bigger theory, if you can get that, if that makes sense.
Right. And if somebody wants to call in to ask you a question, it's 435-272-1997. Okay, we're going to go down under. One of our longtime listeners from New Zealand, Lisa, asks a question. She says, how do you start liberty work? Like you know anything about that. I mean, geez. Also, any tips for those of us who would like to learn? Clinics are not really a thing in New Zealand, so would generally have to self-start. You know, I think, and I'm going to add to do it safely in there.
Why'd you have to put that on it?
I've seen some challenging liberty work in the past.
Well, you know, so when you say how you start your liberty work,
yeah,
there's basically there's two different. When people say liberty work, very often they will either be talking about liberty work groundwork or liberty work ridden. And so I'm not quite clear
my
whether
guess
this would
is,
be.
Let's go groundwork. I think we're talking ground here.
You're just into safety today, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
So for the, you know, the answer is actually the same for the liberty work ground or ridden. And that is that too many people skip the idea that the bridge between having a halter and lunge line on the horse or having the horse without that and or riding the horse and having the bridle on the horse or riding the horse without that, the bridge that makes sense is that the horse would get to the point where it worked on a very loose line if you were doing the groundwork or a very loose rein if you're doing the ridden work. Because if your goal is to make the line or the rein unnecessary, it would make sense that you need to lessen your dependence on that aid. And so you have to start messing around with basically the biggest thing you're going to be asking yourself over and over again is when my horse goes to leave me on the ground and I normally would pull on the line to get him back, what am I going to fill in the blank with there? If the line's not there, I can't pull on the line. What other tools do I have in my toolbox that I could use to communicate, come back to me? And you're basically just replacing your old go-to, which is, you know, when the horse turns and looks at the gate and goes to leave, I would normally pull on the line. Well, now I need to do something different. So I need to teach the horse a series of cues that would essentially mean the same thing as me pulling on the line. So that could be that, you know, you have a cue that you do that makes the horse turn and look at you more, or you have a cue that you do that makes the horse, you know, come in closer to you. So you could be lunging your horse on a 20-foot line and train the horse some movement with your body, even if that's taking a step back, that meant the horse needed to come from 20 feet into 15 feet and then from 15 feet into 10 feet. And if you did that enough with the line on, then it would make sense that when the line was off, you would be able to then call the horse from 20 feet to 15 feet and from 15 feet to 10 feet, which essentially would also call the horse away from the gate. The mistake most people make is that they take the line off so early. And so do you remember a few years ago when, was it Nick Walenda that walked across the Grand Canyon?
Yes.
So do you think like on day three, he was like, I think I'll do this with no safety net? Or how many years do you think he spent with a safety net?
Quite a few, I would think.
Yeah. And then, so I think what is missing in between there is, because really, if you made a YouTube video series that didn't have all the stuff cut out, there would not be very many people that would watch 500 hours of repeating the same thing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. But that's the reality of what goes into a lot of these horses, is hundreds of hours of repetition of those little things, like lunging your horse on a line and having it come from 20 feet into 15 feet and from 15 feet into 10 feet so consistently that there's no question in your mind or the horse's mind anymore that that's going to work.
And the one thing the videos don't show either is the challenging days. They always show the good days. They never show the challenging days, right? When your horses are testing you, you know, they never show that.
I'm going to challenge that a little bit, because I'm going to say on day three of the Stacy's video, Diary Jack, one of the things I posted was, how many times does Jack drag Stacy out of the video lens? Because my videographer was not a horse person. So even though my husband was standing off to the side, because we're, you know, we've got all these lights and all this stuff set up, and I didn't know, because if you watch the video series, I knew the horse didn't have much training, meaning I knew that the owner who'd raised him had just let him in and out of the pasture. But you don't know until you start asking the horse questions, like you don't know how far they're going to push it. And so on day three, I go out there and I ask him to lunge, and he literally would stand on his hind legs, turn while standing on his hind legs, come down and just lunge. And it would jerk me right out of the video camera thing, because the video guy didn't know to follow that motion.
So the screen was empty. You guys were gone.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you got to just leave it in, because it looks kind of like I want to tell the story. But you'd see me like get jerked out, and then you'd see me like lead him back in and then start again. So I can't remember now if I get jerked out of it like four times, five times, six times. But it's a lot of different times that this horse just keeps dragging me off screen. And then for the next day, we actually just set up like a wall of panels, because at one point, and I forget if we put it in the bloopers or not, but at one point the horse does this and he's headed straight towards the video camera. And the video guy has no clue. And I yelled at my husband, like, Jess, block the camera. And like Jesse like jumps in front to like shoo the horse away from the camera. And the video guy is just like, this is great footage, but he has no idea I'm about to take out his $20,000 video camera with the horse and the whole everything. We're all coming over the top of you right now. So yeah. It's been a popular series because there's some really ugly stuff in there.
I like that you leave it in, though. Not all trainers do. So you know, and I think it's important that you do, because, you know, everybody goes through that stuff, and you don't want to think, well, I'm the only one going through that, right? My horse, the only one that did that.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting question from Aileen. She says, do you consider the proper wording for working on patience with a horse, exposure or desensitizing? For example, as it applies to trail riding and obstacles that might be scary. I wonder why she's asking that.
Well, you know, when I hear that, it makes me, because to me, proper wording, actually, I just made a YouTube video that I'll release later today. And when I'm watching it, all I can keep thinking is I used improper words. But I notice that sometimes I do that because it shakes you out of a preconceived way of thinking. Excuse me, I'm experiencing a podcaster's worst nightmare.
She's got a cold, and it's never fun when you're doing a live show.
That's
Stacy
right.
She said, I'll do the live show next time, not knowing she was going to be sick.
So. That's right. So, excuse me while I'm coughing up a lung over here.
Okay.
Yeah. But what I noticed was that when I was making that video, sometimes I'll swap out words because it actually wakes you up as a listener a little bit more. It wakes me up as the person teaching, and it just stands out more. So when I look at this exposure or desensitizing, I would say that it depends on how it. So when we look at it, when you're training the horse and you're going out there to work on obstacles that might be scary, like it says in here, exposure or desensitizing, some people will look at exposure and think that means they need to give the horse a chance to see this 100 times. And some people might think exposure and think, well, maybe I'll feed him grain over there on that scary obstacle. And some people, so it's amazing how many different ways that people can even look at a word like exposure. Desensitizing is becoming more and more. You want to finish that sentence for me, Glenn? It's becoming like, you just got to make sure, what does it mean to you? So basically what I'm saying is, what does the word mean to you? Because I think that has some effect on how you approach it. Ask yourself how you want to approach the situation, because the word you choose to use and your meaning that you assign to that word is going to affect how you show up.
That makes sense.
So if you look at desensitizing as making the horse numb or whatever, if you look at it as a negative thing, then you will approach it from a negative thing. If you look at desensitizing like rocking the balance from my horse is too sensitive to my horse is now not overly sensitive, then you'll be fine using the word desensitized. So you need to ask yourself, when you use a certain word, is that word helping you or holding you back? Because you can just swap it out for a different word.
Very good. Well, I'm going to give you a break here to cough some more. I just wanted to mention to everybody that Stacy is kind enough this year to join us. She was on last year as a guest, but this year she's joining us for our 12-hour live holiday radiothon on December the 2nd. She's going to host an hour for us, and it is December the 2nd. If you have never joined us for it before, it is the largest social media event for the horse world, the holidays. We're on live from 9 in the morning till 9 in the evening on December 2nd. It's always Cyber Monday, the Monday after Thanksgiving. And we're going to have tons of guests. We have hundreds of callers. But most importantly for you right now is you can win up to $5,000 in prizes. We have some great grand prizes. Kelly Hurd Jewelry, who makes all kinds of really nice horsey jewelry stuff, is giving away a $500 gift certificate as one of the grand prizes. And our biggest prize is WinTech is giving your choice of any saddle. So their one dressage saddle goes up to $1,500. So you can pick any saddle from the WinTech line if you win. We have tons of other prizes as well all day long, over $5,000 worth. And to enter and to figure out how to enter, just go to holidayradiothon.com and click on the How to Enter button. And you'll see there's three different ways you can enter to win. And we hope that you tune in on December 2nd. It's so much fun. You can tune in live or listen to it later recorded. Stacy's on in the afternoon. She'll be joining us for the first time with a guest. And so we're hoping that you join us that day as well. But right now, we're going to give Stacy a little break to go get the coughing out. And we're going to hear about Equithrive. And we're going to come back with our first guest here in a few minutes as well.
It's no secret the animal nutrition market is saturated with substandard products and unfounded claims. And as horse owners, trying to choose the right supplement for the right horse can be maddening and ultimately a waste of time and money. At Equithrive, our mission is to make this whole song and dance easier on you and much more beneficial to your horses, with products that are developed with care and backed by science. Products you can trust to safely support optimal health and wellness to your horses. Products that are independently tested to ensure your horse is getting exactly what it says on the label. And clinically tested to prove that, you know, it actually works on horses and not, say, mice. Equithrive's proprietary resveratrol ingredient, resvericin, has been scientifically proven to reduce inflammation and oxidative stress in horses, as well as help support optimum metabolic function. So stop wasting your time and money. If you believe in products backed by scientific research and clinical trials, Equithrive is the name to remember. So do your critters a favor, visit equithrive.com today.
Stacy, let's give your website out here quick too, so people can go. And what do you have on the website?
Oh, I have lots of things on the website. So it's stacywestfall.com, and I have thousands of blogs over there and a nice little search button so you can search on about any topic and come up with something. And lots of videos and podcasts and all kinds of useful information over there. it basically tries to house everything that I do online, which over the years has been quite a bit.
And your podcast is called, in case people want to find it on a podcast player,
Stacy Westfall Horse Podcast.
It's that simple.
As of tomorrow, I'll move into a series where I'm going to be talking about the equipment that I use in my barn. And it's season 5 of my podcast. And the first 4 seasons, I talked about the rider's mind and then the rider's body, the horse's mind and the horse's body. And my whole point there was that I could talk about fear from, you know, I could talk about fear from the angle of just the rider, or fear from the angle of the horse, or how these things might show up in the horse's body. So it gave me a framework for breaking it down and getting people to look at it in a little bit different way.
And so how often do you put those out?
Weekly.
Okay.
Those come out every Wednesday.
Got it. We have Joe Lee on the line. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Hi, Stacy.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Yes. I really appreciate I'm good. I really appreciate all the work that you do. And my daughter Serena went to your class in Pennsylvania, and we really appreciated you.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Do you have a question for us, Julie?
Yes, I did. I moved my horse to a new stable, and it's very busy with horses when you tie them in the aisle, coming and going and constantly moving. And it's been really stressful. And she's a wonderful horse, but just, is there a way that I can work with her to calm her down with all the commotion? And a lot of the people are kind of barrel racers that are, you know, really laid back and nothing makes them nervous. But for me, I'm a little bit more cautious because I've seen a lot of horses get hurt through my years on the farm. And I just, you know, I'm trying to calm her down, but I'm wondering if there's a way I could do it faster so she's not so nervous and worked up when I'm trying to have her stand in cross ties and people keep coming and going past us. And dogs too, dogs, big dogs, little dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. So when you guys were at the other situation, was she saying she was a lot calmer in the quiet barn?
Yes, she was calmer, and I could put her in a stall kind of off to the side where she could chill for a little bit. Here, there's no stalls to put her in. It's just you're kind of out there in the middle. There's a lot of shovels and carts and things like that. So it's kind of like a little obstacle course when we go in there.
Okay.
But there's not really any other place to really tie and work with your horse.
Okay. And when you say tie to work with her, is this the area that you're saddling in, or what are you doing in this area?
Saddling, grooming, right now I've been transitioning her to a new feed cycle. So I'm feeding her, you know, those types of things. The fences outside are all kind of rope fences, so I can't really tie her to anything out there.
Okay. And the reason I'm asking is, first, the first way that I would look at it is, so I built my barn to be a little bit on the chaotic side, meaning like everything is kind of open, my stalls open into the arena. I set up a round pen inside during the bad weather. And so we'll be round penning horses just outside the stalls. And so I like the idea of being able to create a little bit of chaos that I can control, because it gives me another way to approach emotional control training with the horse. And so one thing would be to try to look for the positives in it, because if you can find some positives in it, then it will make it easier for you to relax into it, which you will then help her feed off from a positive cycle instead of a more stressed out cycle. Now, obviously, if you are looking around and you're like, the shovel is a danger, then it's going to be hard for you to relax, but she's also going to feed off from that. And so what I would do is I would try to find a way, even if it is going outside, like say into the driveway where you've got a little bit of room, and being able to do some of the training. Like, you've watched some of the videos where, when I talk about emotional control, how you can like whip around the horse and they stand quietly because they understand the whipping doesn't mean run. Have you seen that done? Okay. So when
yes, I've seen you do that with the
Yeah. So when you teach a horse that theory that things around you can get chaotic, but you can stay calm. So you need to teach that in an area where you can watch some of those videos, the YouTube videos that I have up there and stuff like that. You can watch it and you can recreate it in an area where the horse, if they move around, is going to turn into more like lunging around you. And even a driveway can work, a driveway, a pasture, a paddock. And then when you go into that situation where it sounds like you're cross tying her, the first thing that comes into my mind is I actually teach my horses to ground tie, which again, you can totally do in a driveway where you're going to have more open space. You're going to want to keep them on like a longer line. Like I have a 24-foot lunge line. And the reason for teaching ground tying here is that, first of all, if there's a lot of people moving around you, it's just flat easier if your horse is ground tied versus having to duck underneath the cross ties and having the horses get pulled on and stuff. But the horse has to mentally choose to stand in this location. And that is a big deal because the amount of training that it takes and understanding between you and the horse to have that horse put its, what I do is I make the two front feet square up. So I, like, say you stop and the right foot's ahead of the left foot. I would back the right foot up to beside the left foot or pull the left foot forward to beside the right foot, your choice. And I would tell the horse, whoa, excuse me. And then I would put slack in the lead line. I'd still hold onto the end of it, but I would let it hang down there. And if the horse moves, I put the horse's foot back. Whatever, if the right foot stepped forward, I would back it back up. If the right foot stepped back, I would pull it back forward. And I make this such a big deal. I did not put an area to tie my horses in my new barn. I wanted myself to be forced to ground tie every time because I believe in it that much. And I think you'll see that it will change a lot if your focus is about that and your focus is less about the dogs and the chaos. Not to mention, without the cross ties involved, there's one less thing for the horse to get wrapped up in, so you can relax a little bit more.
Sure. And would you say, like, practice that like 15, 20 minutes a day with her?
Yes, I practice it. I don't have an area to tie. I practice it every time I want to brush, saddle, all the time. Yep.
Oh, thanks, Stacy.
Thanks, Julie. We appreciate you calling.
You're welcome.
All right.
I'm over here coughing.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Take care.
You're doing good. Everybody, I think half the country has colds right now. So did you want to go right to your guest or do you want to take a song and regroup a bit and come back? It's up to you.
Let's go with this, and I'm just gonna pass more of the work over to Ginny.
Okay, there you go. So she's ready.
Okay. Hi, Ginny.
Hello. Hey, how's it going, guys?
So, Ginny, it looks like you just have to talk, and Stacy's gonna cough. It seems to be the way it's gonna be. No conversation today. You have to do a lecture.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure how long I'll be going either because I'm right in the same boat. So
I was at.
No, it's great to be here. That was a great conversation that I just listened to.
Very good. Well, you really might be picking up the boatload of this if I go into another one of these coughing moments. But basically,
not a worry.
So Ginny and I recorded a podcast, actually my 50th episode last week was us talking at a coffee shop. And we got some feedback, and I kind of wanted to talk about the feedback. But Ginny, how much of this can I push over to you? Can you summarize the question that came in at all?
I think just to kind of give people an idea really quickly of our conversation was very broad. We started out talking about balance, of this work-life balance question that we both have people ask us about. And Stacy has a lot of people ask her that question, you know, on her Facebook page and things like that. And so we thought we'd dive into that. And so we had some conversation around whether or not that idea of balance really exists. And we ended up going into some conversation around what it means to be congruent and incongruent. And so we had someone that posted a response to the podcast after she'd listened to it. and was kind of asking about, you know, is this happening? This thing that's happening for me with trying to set a goal with my horse and trying to understand whether or not she was being congruent or incongruent, and if that was impacting her ability to achieve her goals. And so
Jenny, let me stop you right there. Can you explain congruent and incongruent?
Yeah. That's the, I want to kind of give people an idea of what we're talking about with that. And so what we mean when we're talking about being congruent or incongruent, as everybody knows, your horse, like if you're feeling irritated and you try to pretend that you're not irritated, your horse says, "You're irritated. Stop pretending that you're not irritated." Because horses, when they are allowed, are always congruent. This is a big part of the work I do with leaders, is saying the horse is letting you know whether or not you are being honest about how you're feeling right now in this moment. And so, so being incongruent, right, is, as an example, somebody says, "How are you doing today?" And you just had something really irritating happen to you. And so you're kind of mad, maybe frustrated or whatever. And you just go, "I'm fine." That is the most basic definition of incongruence. So what you're saying and what you're feeling aren't matching up, and it affects your energy.
Okay, got it. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And we all do. The other day, I mean, my pony, not through any fault of his own, when I was out driving him because of the four horses next door were running around like nuts, was being, you know, a little fresh, and we didn't accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. And I was a little irritated, and I'm sure he thought I was irritated at him when I was really irritated at the horses next door and the whole situation. And I tried to hide it, but you're right. You can't hide it. You try real hard to hide it, and then that makes you worse, I think, actually.
And you just said something really key there, right there, Glenn, because the key is that the horse is congruent, and the horse assumes you're congruent. So when you are irritated about the horses next door, I believe you're correct that your horse assumes the irritation is with that relationship because you're in that moment interacting with your horse. So you have to get you have to either, you know, be congruent, or you have to get your horse and yourself to the point where I find it fascinating. And you got to tell me a little bit, Glenn, you know, when you're driving teams of horses, it fascinates me that you can actually correct one of the two and that the other one you're not correcting knows it's not them.
Yeah. And I kind of don't understand. I've never done teams and yet I've driven a four, and that's even more complicated. You know, I've driven a four, and she was like, "Well, you need, you know, when the front left is off a little, this is how you correct the front left one." And I'm going, I'm not even sure I'm driving any of them at this point, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, it does get overwhelming. But let's go back to that situation with the pony, because that's exactly what you're talking about. I was irritated. And it's hard not to be irritated when you're irritated, right? I mean, that's hard.
True story.
Do you know what I mean?
True story.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when Stacy and I are talking about it with ourselves and with people setting a goal, you know, the key is that you just acknowledge it, you know? So instead of trying to hold it in, right, and your jaw starts to tighten and your muscles start to get tense and you're like, okay, I'm not going to be irritated. I'm just going to figure this out. The best thing your horse wants you to do is just go, you know what? I'm irritated. And okay, let's figure out now, how do we work through this? You know? And I think that's a big part of what we do just on a daily basis. You know, in my world, it's leaders walking into a meeting with their team and trying to pretend everything is okay. The reality is the people on your team that are sitting in that room are picking up on your energy, which is telling them something's not fine. They don't know what it is. They don't know why it's happening, but they're picking up on that energy. And so so when we're talking about it and setting goals, you know, Stacy and I were kind of going back and forth, having some conversation around, is it incongruent to have a goal that you're not sure you can achieve? Is that creating incongruence with your horse? And then we kind of were talking about it being something called cognitive dissonance. And Stacy, are you able to take a minute and talk about your idea of cognitive dissonance when somebody's setting a goal with their horse?
I am. First, I want to jump back because I have a voice for just a second and talk to Glenn's question with the pony just a little bit more. And when I, in your situation with the pony, so you're driving the pony, you have a goal of what you want to work on, and the neighbor's horses start running around and freaking out. And I think if we slow it down and we go, it feels like you're irritated at the horses next door running around because they're getting in the way of the goal that you have with the pony. But the way that I would encourage you to look at it is, it sounds like I'm blocking it, but I promise I'm not. I actually am like, this is always and only about the relationship between me and the pony. And and so the external thing of the horses running around the pasture next door, when you can get to the point where there is an excitement about the fact that that muddy water, that extra energy, gives you a chance to practice with your pony the responses to you and your signal, it is much easier to drop the irritation with the horses next door. Now, where this becomes a challenge is, I think it becomes letting go of the goal you had for that day, which might be like, you know, whatever the, I don't know what the goal was, but, you know, I want to be able to do ABC. You might end up working on XYZ. You might end up working on something different. But if you know that it's deepening the relationship with the pony, then what starts to happen is every time the outside things you can't control, that would normally irritate you, if you can change the view of them to this pressure is going to happen in life unless I just stay in a very tiny little bubble. And if this pressure allows me to work on the relationship with the horse, what'll happen is, it's almost like if you can picture like the arc of like a rainbow, the first half of this work like this is really difficult. But when the horse completely buys in, what happens is the next time that everything starts running around in the pasture, when the horse really figures this out and you're on that second half of that rainbow and the horse is really bought in, everything gets crazy and they look to you even more. Now, Glenn, your focus was leaving your pony and going to the horses next door. So when your focus can stay on the pony, despite the horses next door, you stand a better chance of getting the pony to focus on you. So it becomes this very like, I actually can get excited when my horses get into big, weird situations because they can create pressure that I have trouble creating at home.
Well, that makes sense? I feel vindicated because that's exactly what I did do. We you know, awesome. I gave up on the goal because that wasn't going to happen that day. And then we, you know, I knew if I could get him to do one lap of the arena without freaking out, you know, that we could do it quietly and that he was paying attention to me. And that's when I quit. I got that one lap in and we called it a pleasant day and he got to quit. You know, even though we had only been out there 10, 12 minutes, but we got that one quiet lap in and then, you know, we were able to call it a day. We had to call it a day at that point because Jennifer went off, but, and I wasn't going to do it alone. So yeah. So that's a horse husband there, by the way. We don't do things alone. So,
and so I think what you're saying there too, which is really interesting. So you stayed congruent with yourself. Like you were feeling irritated, but then you switched the goal so that you could stay. You felt it and you changed your goal. So you stayed congruent. The question that came in after the podcast that we did, because we went pretty deep, it was like over an hour long talk about balance. It was like crazy deep. But what I brought up when I was answering, basically her question was, what if your present self isn't congruent with your dream or your goal? And so to me, she had congruency, like this internal feeling congruency confused with something that I would call cognitive dissonance, which is the difference between the idea that like I want to, so let's say that somebody out there wants to learn how to do flying lead changes, but they don't know how to do flying lead changes. Well, they don't know how to do flying lead changes. They honestly don't know how. But they want to know how to do lead changes. And somewhere between where they are now, which is They cannot do a flying lead change. And where they want to be, which is they understand and can do a flying lead change, they're going to have to embrace some kind of change in between. So there's this, and to me, that's different. That's not the same thing as being congruent or incongruent. It's that gap. It's that gap of growth in between. And yeah.
Do you know what? You just described life. Forget horses.
Yeah. So maybe horses right? are just yeah. a giant, horses are just a giant reflection of life. This is kind of our point.
Yeah. I mean, that's life. We all go through that with our careers.
That's a whole
with
other conversation.
Yeah. I mean, we all go through everything you just talked about with our careers, with our spouses, with our friends, with our, oh mm-hmm. God, our family. I mean, we're constantly doing that, right?
Exactly.
So, well, you're right. We could do this for another hour.
Yeah.
Jenny, you have a challenging job. So you do this with corporate people all the time, right? And you're introducing horses to the mix, obviously. And but I don't want to get into that. We talked about that the last time. We have to get to our next guest.
Right.
But Jenny, you're dealing with corporate people who are a lot like actually Stacy and I, to be honest. We're a little type A, you know, we're type A people. We're driven. We're entrepreneurs, or we wouldn't be doing this podcast right now. So that's got to even be tougher with type A people because they're so driven. Sometimes we don't want to deal with the middle part. We want to get from A to D, you know, B and C. I don't want to deal with B and C. I want to get from A to D. And that's got to be tough with the kind of people you're dealing with.
I think that's part of why I love doing it. That challenge of, getting people to pause for a moment when they're out. Because you're right, when they go out with the horses, they have a task and they get real focused on the task. And, you know, the horses almost routinely, if the group of people are not paying any attention to the relationship, which is a lot of what Stacy's talking about, the horse just goes, no, I'm not going to go because you're not building a relationship with me. I can't trust you to go there. And so I have this incredible opportunity to help people who are very driven. I work with some very, very successful corporate leaders and giving them the opportunity to stop for just a moment and understand that the people that are executing the strategy for your organization are people. They are emotional beings who have lots of different life experiences and personalities, just like the horses do. And it helps leaders stop and understand how to relate differently to their people, because the horses make them have to step back from the task and say, okay, how do we build this relationship so that the task happens? And I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm a glutton for punishment of putting myself out there all the time with them, but I'm on my way right now to go work with a group of manufacturing leaders from a global manufacturing company. And so I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be stepping into one of those situations. These are very, very fact-based scientific people. And so the horses are definitely going to have their work cut out for them tomorrow. Oh,
engineers have to be the worst. I apologize. You can email Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, all you engineers. But that's right. And the other thing, type A people, and I'm guilty of this, we tend to always be looking to the future and not enjoying today. And when you hear the top executives, when they're interviewed after retirement, the thing they always say is, I wish I had enjoyed the ride more. They never say, I wish I had accomplished more. They always say, I wish I had enjoyed my kids. I wish I had enjoyed the ride. But we're always so trying to get to that end goal, whatever it is, that we sometimes lose track of today.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's where this whole mindset piece that Stacy and I talk about all the time in so many different aspects. Mindset really, really can shift everything. And that's what happens when people are out with the horses. As we all know, the horses are living in the present. They're not focused on what happened yesterday, and they're not focused on, you know, what needs to happen tomorrow or next week or next year or whatever. They're not worried about quarterly financials or any of those things. And they just really help us to stop and get in the moment. And And I think that that's just really important for leaders right now, because people need their leaders to be present. I mean, yes, you have to be able to look ahead and know where you need to go. But right now, the whole business world is so uncertain. There's so much uncertainty. And leaders need to be able to move through that the way that horses do. Horses move through uncertainty every moment. And we have the opportunity to learn from that and to realize that we can shift our mindset in order to not see uncertainty as a stressor. And I think it goes back to what your caller was talking about with the woman with her horse in the Iowa. And Stacy, I love the way that you talked about her shifting her mindset to see it not as a negative, but how can this be a positive? Because her shifting her mindset like that is going to shift her energy, and her horse is going to appreciate that. And so that's a lot of what I'm doing with leaders. And that's, I think, one of the things that makes Stacy's work so powerful, is she really understands how to help people shift their mindset.
Well, thank you, Ginny. I plan on having coffee/tea, because you're a tea drinker. I'm the coffee drinker. I plan on having coffee tea with you again. And I think we just record it and make another, maybe we'll go for a record. Maybe we'll record, like, I don't know, hours and hours of conversation, or we'll see what my voice is up to. But I want to have you on here again in the future. Thank you so much for joining us today on your trip over. Thanks for taking your time.
Yeah. Thanks, you guys. Thanks Glenn. Good to talk to you guys. Good, have fun.
Good luck with the execs.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I hope they're not all engineers. So your next guest is ready.
Okay, awesome. Well, on the line we have Molly Wagner. And Molly, how are you doing?
Great. How are you, Stacy?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, except the whole cough thing. If I want to stay really congruent, I should definitely tell you that I'm hacking up a lung over here. So if there's this blank spot, you can just kind of fill it in with singing or whatever you want, because... it's just me over here coughing up a lung. But otherwise, pretty good. How about you?
Good, good.
Well, today I wanted to have you on because I've obviously known you for a very long time. And I think, Glenn, I definitely want you to ask some questions, because Molly and I have known each other. And the subject we're about to talk to, we walked through pretty hand in hand for quite a while. Molly for sure took the brunt of it, but I was there on the sidelines. And so you might be able to ask some questions, Glenn. But basically, Molly, what I wanted to talk to you about today was your horse, Cody, and the thing that you walked through with him, basically learning about uveitis, which most people would know more commonly as moon blindness. And I think it's a story worth sharing for a number of reasons, because I actually think there's a lot of this that's going undiagnosed early. And I think you might be able to shed some light on what the early signs were and basically just help educate people on the awareness. And then we can talk about kind of where it led you. But would you share just a little bit, kind of the brief overview of Cody, and then we can go a little bit deeper?
Absolutely. So I purchased Cody. You know, Stacy, you knew him him a little bit, when he was a 4-year-old. And so I purchased him too. He was a big stopper and I love reining. And so I wanted to have another horse so I had more time to ride, not another horse to ride. So I purchased him. He wasn't finished, but with Jesse and Stacy's help, the thought was, I'm going to learn a lot from this horse, because since he wasn't totally finished, I was going to be able to work through some of the things together with their coaching. So that was the whole basis for buying him, right? Was I was going to show him as a reiner and trail ride on him. So I bought him as a 4-year-old. Fast forward, it wasn't quite 18 months, about 16 months in. We're starting to get together. You know, in the beginning, at least for me, what I've experienced as a non-pro is it takes some time. You got to work through some things. And so we were starting to get together, and I showed up at the barn he was at, because Jesse and Stacy, you guys were actually on the road at the time. And I showed up at a barn he was at, and his eye was half swollen shut and it was watering. And I said, oh gosh, you know, what happened? So fast forward, vet comes, gives him his medication, eye ointment, and he's back up and running. That was on his left eye. So that would have been in the summer, I think it was June or July, and I go to an August show, and I haul him there, and he has the same thing going on, but in the right eye. Well, the first time when the vet came and looked at him at his left eye, they said, well, he must have just got something in it, got scratched, it healed up within like 24 hours. He was good to go. So when it happened to the right eye, I thought, well, we're at a show. There's a lot of dust. Maybe that's what it is. So there was a vet there that was competing with his family. And I asked him, hey, can you just take a look at him? And that was the first time that anyone had even brought into awareness to me that, hey, this is moon blindness. And I was like, what? how could this be moon blindness? He's perfectly healthy, right?
It was 7-year-old quarter horse, so that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, he would have been 5.5 when he got it, when he was first diagnosed.
Got it.
You know, you hear all the things, all the typical, as I start researching it, right? It was typical if it was bald face horses, blue-eyed horses, paints, Appaloosas, horses of color, right? Well, Cody's almost a solid bay, right? Dark bay, and a quarter horse. So so I start kind of going through that journey. And what ended up happening was in the beginning, you know, we were treating it just as you would kind of topically. And it started this increase, like they were just increasing. It's like I would treat, he'd be good for a week and he'd get it again in both eyes. So I ended up taking him to Ohio State. And that's when I first learned. And actually, Stacy, you were with me. That was a rough day. That was a tough one. We learned, I believe they called him an overachiever. They say that they typically get it in one chamber in one eye because there's two chambers in the eye. And he actually had it in both chambers in both eyes, which was causing the flare-ups on a very regular basis. So that's kind of where it all started when he was about 5.5.
Yeah.
Do you guys want any questions?
Yeah, I what I want to throw in there is that, you know, to me, having been, I was there at the show the second time he flared up, the first time you were just discussing about being at the show. And, you know, if I'd walked by and seen, it would have been very easy to think the same thing that you did, which was, hey, there could just be a little dust in his eye. It was not a big dramatic thing. And I think that earlier in this call today, I was talking about how when you're training horses, a lot of times it's like collecting puzzle pieces and you're almost like collecting these little bits of knowledge as you go. And then you almost have to look back over time. And thankfully that vet at that show brought it up to you. So it brought it to your awareness. But I suspect that there are a lot of horses out there that are giving these little signs that could be, you know, kind of misread, because it would have been really easy to just say a few times in a row, like, this horse just has some dust or hay or whatever in his eye. And I guess I want to make a point there.
Yeah.
Flies. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because it wasn't anything major. It wasn't anything super alarming. Right. Looking back now, you know, and I think you're the same way, Stace, we were so close to it. You know, I can walk by horses now and I'm like, somebody needs to get him checked. Like,
yeah.
That's not just a watery swollen, because there's just this little tint of blue that shows up that's glassy. That yes. In the beginning, it's not major. As it develops, at least for me, it becomes way more prominent, which is what, if you've heard of moon blindness, at least for me, what I was used to was that bright blue, glassy, cloudy eye is what I had seen. And in the beginning, it's not that. At least it wasn't that for me. It was just a tint. Yeah. But now you can see it you know, in other horses, if that makes sense. So I agree with you. I think it very much goes undiagnosed because it's not something we come across every day.
Yeah. Right? I know that when I've gone, I know you mentioned, you know, you've walked by horses and noticed and been like, hey, you might want to have this looked at. I know that I've gone to some horse sales, especially some of the smaller, you know, more local ones that are, they're not like a big name brand where all the horses are being vet checked on the way in, which they do at a lot of the big shows, big sales. But I've been to a lot of sales and I've walked through and been kind of shocked at how many I think would actually be diagnosed. And it makes me wonder because they're going to start to have sight issues. And you experienced with Cody, like the pain. And can you tell a little bit about what Dr. Latimer was explaining to you with the headaches and that kind of stuff? Because I found that really interesting.
Yeah. So as we kind of progressed on, he, you know, he obviously got worse and he ended up like in March, he became like first of that year. He became a candidate for the surgery where he actually had implants administered and put in both eyes that would administer medication to him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they would last for 3 to 5 years, they said. And so I had those put in to try to slow down the episodes so mm-hmm. that, you know, Stacy was helping me and we were trying to get him used to losing his sight because he was mm-hmm. such a brilliant horse that, you know, we thought that, hey, look, he can go on even if he is blind, but we had to slow it down. So that was why we did that. But coming across Stacy's travels, she came across a vet, Dr. Claire Latimer, at Root and Riddle in Lexington, Kentucky. And fortunately, Claire took me on as a client, and I would haul Cody down there. I live in Ohio, so I'd haul down there about once a month and meet with her. And one of the things I had told my vet was, you know, you become acutely aware of everything about them because you're trying to do everything you can to help. And I had mentioned to my vet, gosh, it looks like he has excruciating headaches some days. Like it just looks like the muscles in his face and his eyes and all of that. And he said, well, we don't know, but that could be the case. Well, then when I went to Dr. Latimer, who is like an awesome ophthalmologist there in Lexington as her specialty, I asked her and she said, absolutely. You know, it's a flare up. It's an inflammatory response in the eyes. And absolutely it can cause, you know, she felt like it could cause headaches and things like that, which at this point, you know, I was watching him so closely that you could almost see when a flare up was about to happen. And I could almost catch them before just due to like the tightening in the muscles in his face and different things that he would do before it would ever even hit, which actually ended up helping kind of get in front of the flare-ups. She was amazing.
The fact that you can put something in the eye to administer medicine over 3 to 5 years is amazing in itself.
Isn't it? It was there. I know that we don't have unlimited time today, but Molly's story with Cody, goes on and on because she, like you said, I really respected all the decisions you made all the way along the way of really committing yourself to understanding this horse, which was, it was inspiring to watch because, and I'm Molly, I hate to put you on the spot and I promise that you can just like, if you're crying and you can't breathe, then, just don't answer because I kind of want to read the poem. For Cody's poem, if you're okay with that. Because yes, to me, it summarizes what you guys went through really well. So are you ready, Glenn? We might all be crying.
Okay, I got my tissues. I'm ready.
Okay. So just a little thing. My mom, growing up, always wrote poems for different things. And when Cody, because he eventually passed away. Can I have you do the short version of that, Molly? Like he he foundered and
so he, how long did he go, by the way, before that happened?
He went from the time he was diagnosed to the time he passed away was about a little over 2 years.
Okay.
So 26, 28 months, something like that.
Does it normally
26 months.
Does it normally happen that fast with moon blindness?
Well, what ended up happening with him, moon blindness eventually wasn't the cause of his death. In treating moon blindness, especially one as severe as his, like I said, he had in both chambers in both eyes, we were doing everything that we could to keep them down. So in doing that, you're constantly balancing medications, right?
Yeah.
And so no one really knows for sure exactly how some of this stuff happens and what causes it. You know, trust me, I've tried to pinpoint it and pin it down. I still am to this day. Stacy could attest to this. So that it never happens to me or anybody that I know again. But basically, he had another flare-up. And that flare-up, there was a complication with the medications.
Mm.
And for whatever reason, which none of the vets even know exactly why it happens, but he basically kind of crashed. He went through the floor. He developed sinking laminitis.
Mm.
Which ended up, I treated that for almost 7 weeks, trying to save him from that. And, at the end, I knew when he was done, he told me
they tried
until that point.
They tell you, dogs tell you, horses tell you, they do. All right, Stacy, now that we've set that up, we're going to end the show with everybody crying, you realize, right?
Yeah, I realize this. we'll call it a cliffhanger.
Okay, good. All right, we're ready.
Here's the poem. 3 years ago, Cody came into your life. He felt your love from the very first day. He came to be your practice horse and taught you more in his very own way. Spinning, sliding, changing leads were not all he had to teach. He taught you about unconditional love and how love gives us strength within reach. You learned that his eyesight was failing, with blindness his eventual fate. But you promised to be there forever. Your commitment to Cody was great. You learned things you didn't plan to learn, how to read his moods and his pain, how to keep his eye and his stomach and feet and watch for any decline or gain. He taught you to dream and be patient, that love and friendship can be found in a horse. But the hardest thing he had to teach you was knowing when to let go, of course. The most difficult thing someone can do is to let go of a friend when you must. But you being able to end his pain was where Cody placed all of his trust. He's running through fields, no pain to be felt, and keeping right up with the best, and thanking you always for being so strong and knowing it was his time to rest.
Did you write that?
My mother writes these poems for special occasions. So when people have something impactful in their life, at this point, I call my mom and I go, Mom, this is what's going on. And she wrote that. And
God, she's got talent.
Oh, she has some serious talent. So, and I keep telling her, Mom, I think you could make a business out of this, because she's done it for my kids' birthdays and for like graduations.
Oh, she does
and
do
all
it
these
for
amazing...
happy occasions too. Then.
She does it for very happy occasions. But but to me, like, it's amazing because she captured like everything we were just trying to summarize. Like, you know, you buy horses for like Molly thought she was buying this horse to learn how to spin and slide and change leads. And that is not the end story of what he taught her. And it has shaped and changed her life to where she actually changed her whole career to over to like understanding better horse health. And I think I can hear her sniffling
That's
over
why
there.
I'm so talking.
Now
I'm trying to give
now
her time.
That now that I've passed that on, we'll bring it up again at a later time. But like her whole, it changed these. We all know these horses can change you. We all know they can change you like this. But, you know, you learn things you didn't plan to learn.
And that's a good point, because you a lot of times you kind of have in your mind what you want to go through with your animal or a person for that matter. And it never ends up being what you thought. It always ends up being something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Molly, that's a heck of a story. You know, we hope that you never have to go through that again. Lesson learned now, God. She doesn't need that one again. We can do something. We can do some sliding spins and turns. Did you get a new horse, by the way?
I did. And so, and he is wonderful.
I was risking asking that question. I was praying that the answer was good.
I think I've always been into it, you know, wanted to be in this 100%. And I think if anything, it was probably one of the hardest times I've ever gone through. But at the end of the day, it made me want to do more and learn more and become a better horsewoman. And be able to help more horses. So if anything, now I have three. So with four go. On the way. So
you have a 4-stall barn, you'll have 6 horses.
Exactly. I'm already a stall horse.
Well, and it's ironic. It's appropriate too, because you are the title sponsor. Equithrive is the title sponsor for today's show. And you work for Equithrive now. Was that a result of this whole horse thing that happened?
Yes. Well, it's one of those things where I think with Cody, I became really in tune to him and his needs, and just it was awesome because I'm way more acutely aware with all my horses now. So it helps them. And so one of my horses that I had, I just wanted to give him really good maintenance as he aged, because I was trying to compete with him at a higher level and take him for some year-end things in Oklahoma. And so I took him to my lameness vet, Dr. Genovese, up in northern Ohio, and he recommended this product called Equithrive, Equithrive Joint. And so I had tried some other things. He wasn't lame by any means, but I was just trying to make sure that he felt as good as possible. And I put him on this product. I'd been trying some other things, and it was the one thing where I felt like, my gosh, he, you know, there wasn't anything major he was trying to overcome, but I'm like, man, he feels great, right? And so he gives me the study that was conducted. So it ended up being the only joint supplement that's had a study conducted on it that's on the market that actually proves that it can reduce lameness from an inflammatory response, right? So I fell in love with the product, kept my horse on it, and lo and behold, I got a call like 6 months later, and somebody said, hey, I gave your name to this scientist in Lexington to see if you could help him with his business. He has this awesome product, but a lot of consumers aren't aware of it because it hasn't been taken to the consumers. The vets all back it, but consumers don't know about it. It's like, oh, what is it? They're like, Equithrive. Well, I'm sitting at the barn feeding, right? So I take a picture of the container and send it to him. I'm like, no way. I love this product. It's amazing. And so that's what started it all. And so, yeah, so now I kind of spearhead everything there, Equithrive. And it is a blast. It was started by Dr. Pat Lawless, and he is incredible at formulating products that work.
So I think we need to get Pat on there sometime.
Yeah, where can people find the products?
Because
we're running out of time, so let's make sure we get the website.
Yeah, they can just go to equithrive.com and they can gather more information and purchase the product there. Or there's other retailers that would have it. Smart Pack would have it for sure. Jeffers.com would have it as well.
Okay,
so
very good.
Those are just a few of the places they can find it.
Well, Molly, awesome. Thank you for joining us and telling this story that wasn't easy. We appreciate you being here today, and good luck with the other three, which
three
soon to
and
be
half.
Six.
Thank you.
Yeah, soon to be six. Yeah,
3 and a half. Yeah.
Thanks,
One's
Molly.
In the oven. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Well, thank you, Molly.
Bye. Bye.
Yep. Take care.
All right. We're going to be back tomorrow with Jamie. He'll be here, and we'll have a Wednesday show for you. But we can find Stacy at
StacyWestfall.com.
And you can find all of Stacy's past episodes at horsesinthemorning.com. Just go there. We're here 5 days a week. Stacy is here once a month on the first Tuesday of every month. Stacy, thank you so much for joining us again. I know it was not easy between all the coughing and cold ickiness. So we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I made it.
Thanks for hanging in there. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you tomorrow.